You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Top of the morning. It's Tuesday, 15th of June. I'm Gyan Onyana from Think Markets, coming at you live and ready from the MoneyWeb headquarters in Houghton, Egoli. On the show today, I have Mia Krier from Krier International on the markets, Garrett Stobie from CoreShares on the Young ETF Investors and the CoreShares Total World Stocks ETF. Finally, I have Nolan Vapinar on the attractiveness of SA government bonds. Some morning headlines. On MoneyWeb, we have the post-lockdown house price boom all but over. FNB conducted a survey just looking at the bond registrations and the price of houses over the past 12 months. CNBC headline is another shipping crisis looms on COVID fears in southern China. It seems that there is a backlog in Shenzhen trying to offload some of the containers onto the mainland. Morning markets. The US markets mixed across indices. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down about 0.25%. S&P 500 was up about 0.18%. And the Nasdaq was up 0.74%. In Asia, Sydney's green 1.02% higher. Tokyo up 1.03%. Commodities mostly green overnight. Gold's trading at $1,861 per fine ounce. Rand against the greenback, marginally weaker at 1379. And the top 40 opening call for a slightly positive open, up 0.12%, 77 points higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
You're listening to MoneyWeb Now. I am Gear standing in for Simon. Chatting to us now is Mia Krier, director from Krier International. Top of the morning, Mia, and thank you for your early morning.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
The market was rather buoyant in yesterday's trading sessions with a mix of different outcomes from different sectors. Over the past week, gold stocks have been rather weak and banks very strong. In the recent Q1 GDP print, gold mining was one of the leading drivers of economic growth. With overall weakness seen over the past week, has the market started to lose interest in the gold mining sector?
Well, that would be debatable because we've seen the gold mining industry do particularly well over the past year due to the fact that we had that substantial weakening of the rand about a year ago. And then we also had the gold price doing pretty well until the end of last year. So that came into the earnings of these companies, and that actually propelled people to still hold the gold mining shares. Gold mining shares have been a much better investment for those investors up until now, more so than the gold price has been.
So when there were fears of inflation during the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, the metal rallied to prices above $1,900, and we saw incredible profits from the gold counters. Since the gold price has rather stagnated over the past year, do you believe there are any factors to see a breakout in the price of gold?
Well, that's very difficult to know. We don't really forecast the gold price, but that would be impossible for me to predict. I just think that we consider these companies in South Africa, they're well positioned, and we are still one of the dominant producers of gold in the world. So it still works out very well for these companies as exporters of gold from South Africa's perspective.
So with the recent sell-off in the gold sector, and I've started to see a resurgence in financial stocks, specifically banks. In the latest Q1 GDP numbers, credit extensions were up, bond registrations were up. And are we seeing a sector rotation between gold stocks and the banking stocks?
That's also very difficult to pinpoint out of which specific sectors in South Africa you would see that shift towards the other, especially from these two very diverse sectors. But the recovery from the banks had actually started around the end of June, July last year already. And if you consider the high in the gold price, it was also around the end of July last year. So that rotation, if that was a rotation at all, would have actually started during that time already, during August last year. And now we've seen the gold price come down quite a bit, as we just spoke about, and we also saw the financial sector rally quite substantially from that point on. from the beginning of this year, it's been sort of sideways until about April, where we saw that last final push to the upside. So these companies have done well. We still think that there's a bit of a margin squeeze on them due to the fact that that the interest rate is low, but they are well positioned in South Africa. And what we've now seen, and that's what the market is really like, is the fact that they are actually writing back all that provision they made for bad debts to their income.
Are there any banks you're particularly a like of?
Well, I think, you know, we've got some quality banks there out there in South Africa, and then some less so. So for us, Standard Bank has always been one of the best positioned banks, and we do like the fact that they've got quite a big exposure in South Africa. And then, of course, Capitec has always been a standout.
So sticking to the financial stocks, so Alexandra Forbes reported yesterday and was trading positively up until the investor's call. Then it closed off marginally lower, about 0.51%. So they announced that they're selling their life and risk business. Was the 100 million rand really fair for investors?
Well, I haven't really priced the deal up until now. I've looked at it and I've looked at what they said. But for me, sort of the bigger part of the fact is that they struggled to make profit during the past year. They were also slapped with a big penalty in the UK due to a business sector that they've already sold, a while ago. They'll then have to pay about, we don't know the exact amount yet, but it seems just less than 300 million this financial year, and that affected the earnings. So the profit came out slightly below what it was the previous round. They managed to increase their dividend. But so it was a fair set of results given the trading environment and the issues that they've sat with. They've also focused now on, or said they will be focusing only on the EB business, the employee benefit business, as they've now sold off that, or committed to sell off the major part of their life insurance to Sanlam.
Thank you to Mia Kure, Director, Kure International.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money.
You're listening to MoneyWeb Now, and I'm Gia standing in for Simon. Chatting to us now is Gareth Stobey from Cautious. Top of the morning, Gareth, and thank you for your early morning.
Good morning.
Since the beginning of the pandemic, globally we're seeing a sense of democratization of the investment and financial markets. And this has led to individuals taking their own investment decisions into their own hands. Have you seen a dramatic shift in the profile of the investor? And are more investors accessing your products directly through stockbrokers or ETF platforms? Or are they still accessing the product through IFAs?
Well, at CoreShares, we encourage both access points to our product set. So I think it's very healthy for one to take ownership of their own financial position, and by all means, if they feel comfortable to make their own asset allocation call and say, okay, all right, I'm going to invest this much in equities and this much in property, for instance, then ETFs provide a great access point to markets because you are immediately diversified, it's low cost, it's transparent, and so forth. But we do also see a role for advisors to play. I mean, if you just look at the last 18 months, it's been an emotional roller coaster, and it's been very difficult for clients to always stay the course in that sort of environment. And if one disinvests at the wrong time, it can be very prejudicial to their financial plan. And that's precisely when financial advisors can play a very important role in terms of, you know, holding the client's hand and making sure that as I say, they stick to the plan. But in both cases, whether it's someone who's feeling self-directed, well-read, there's loads of stuff on the internet these days and feels empowered to make a decision, then yes, definitely ETFs have been a good place to start. But equally, advisors can use those same building blocks in building a solution for clients.
And are you seeing the age profile change? Are you seeing more young investors accessing your product?
Well, it's sometimes difficult for us to see directly because clients obviously access our products via the JSE. So they will be making use of other online platforms or other stockbroking platforms, the likes of Easy Equities. And certainly there we've seen a huge jump in the number of accounts being opened and interest in financial markets, and that's wonderful to see. I often think of myself in sort of my early 20s and when I started investing in the stock market. It's quite a daunting place, and I remember joining a little investment club, and we sort of cobbled together the three shares that we thought had the greatest promise. And I remember one of those shares did well, the other two sort of muddled along. I think where ETFs are so great for that type of investor is that by making a simple investment into, say, a top 50 ETF or S&P 500 ETF, you immediately diversified across a whole range of sectors and a whole range of stocks. So, again, from an access point of view, it's a really good way to start. And with global markets generally having had a pretty good run of things of late, it's obviously brought a lot of new interest into investing in stocks.
All right, Gareth. The CoreShares Total World ETF has been a revolutionary addition to the array of ETFs clients can access. The mix of both emerging and developed markets is one that has yet to be seen. Do you believe that this ETF is a heavy weight to developed markets, which I'd recognize, and sectors which generally have very high valuations?
Well, yes, it does. I mean, it's a market cap weighted product. So as a consequence of that, you will have a heavier weighting to stocks that have got a fair degree of momentum around them and have large market share and market cap. Emphasis on market share, because these are companies that have in most cases earned their rights to be large weightings within a cap weighted index. So, you know, we believe in just simply holding market cap weighted indices. There will be times when, you know, clients might feel like they want to take a tactical bet around that. And, you know, maybe they feel like technology stocks are a bit too expensive and they want to have a sort of more quality or defensive type stocks. And interestingly, we've got a product that caters for that as well, our global dividend strategy, which actually invests in sort of boring, steady eddy type stocks and is very much underweight technology stocks. But for those who are looking for just a very simple, core, well-diversified global building block, this is the product that we have brought to market and at a very low cost.
And lastly, as a quick one, just talking about the sector, the JNC announced that it has denied the listing of the first crypto ETF. Do you think the regulatory environment will be an impediment to get alternative ETFs into the industry? And by alternative, I'm meaning the levered ETFs, alternative assets and different and just not the vanilla benchmark industry ETFs.
No, I don't think they're an impediment to that type of asset class. I mean, I think if a client wants to buy cryptocurrencies, I think there are a number of exchanges available, and perhaps not the formal JSE, but there are other exchanges available to that sort of client. I think where most global regulators are in terms of this is that, you know, they're very sort of cautiously looking at that market to ensure that if they allow a regulatory framework that allows access to those sort of products, what does it mean for, you know, the average Joe Soap, you know? And as a regulator, they've got a lot of responsibility on their shoulders to make sure that when they allow new products coming to market that, you know, they're being suitably regulated, priced, that there's liquidity around them, that there's transparency and good governance and all these things. So sometimes it might feel frustrating from the outside that regulators move slowly on these things. But if regulators were allowed something to list that then suddenly blew up, I think people would also be pretty cross with them. So as I said, they've got a weight of responsibility, and I'm sure they would love to innovate as much as the rest of the market, but have taken a cautious approach so far.
That's Gareth Stobie, Managing Director at CoreShares.
Investors now have a final opportunity to invest in a Section 12J investment by the 30th of June. To learn more, join MoneyWeb's editor Rake van Niekerk with Jaltech's Gaurav Nair and Jonty Sachs as they unpack and highlight their top-performing Section 12J investments in a free webinar on Tuesday, 15 June at 12 p.m. Register for the webinar on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb, business and investment insights.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money.
You're listening to MoneyWeb Now. I'm Gareth, standing in for Simon. Joining us now, we have Nolan Vapanar, Fund Manager and Co-CIO at Anchor Capital. Top of the morning, Nolan, and thank you for your early morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
So, Nolan, when credit rating agencies did an assessment in May on SA government bonds, they cited that the jury's still out in the credit risk health of SA. They cited headwinds to growth and execution risk on austerity measures. How does your firm view the resultant default risk on SA government bonds?
Look, we're generally positive on South African government bonds. We have been for a while. We started communicating that, in fact, just after the downgrade, and retain that view. But taking a step back, a consequence of COVID, a consequence of the year that has been unlike any other year in living memory almost, is that South Africa is in a worse place. Our economic growth is smaller than it was a year ago. In fact, it's down 3.2%. And at the same time, our debt load has increased quite dramatically. That puts risks on the system. There can be no doubt that we are more risky. And in fact, if you look at the cost of credit insurance for South Africa, it has gone up. A year ago, it was about 1.9% to cost to insure against the risk of default. Today, it's pushed up to about 2.1%. So the credit rating agencies are probably correct. There is more risk in South Africa than there was. Thing is, when we look on the ground, we also see a lot of positive steps being taken. So, you know, we've seen a clear stance against corruption. We've seen surprising announcements, certainly from our perspective, on electricity. We're seeing the government start to sort of untangle the contingent liabilities around state-owned enterprises like SAA. All of that pulls together to say, yes, we are in a more precarious position, but the direction of change seems to be positive right now. So, you know, we're actually addressing the real issues. We're actually starting to, to tackle the thorny problems. And from that perspective, we're a lot more positive. The main issue, the big one, is frankly our government just doesn't have enough money to continue as it was.
Yes.
And therefore, from our perspective, it's all about the budget, it's all about the fiscus, national treasury, and they've taken an incredibly strong stance on maintaining almost an expenditure ceiling, not increasing debt beyond the initial budget. And that's got massive ramifications for labor. It's got massive ramifications for wage increases for the civil servants. Yeah. And I feel for the civil servants. It wasn't, necessarily something of their own doing. But unfortunately, in times of crisis, and it is a fiscal crisis in many ways, we all end up having to take a bit of pain.
So, Nolan, I looked at the term premium between the three-month JIBAR and the 20-year bond, and this was the highest it has ever been in April. Where are you seeing the most value along the yield curve?
We are positive on duration. We think that investing to earn 3%, 3.5% on JIBAR just is very boring. So we're saying that we think you want to invest for longer periods. I think a 20-year bond is too long, but to our mind, the sweet spot on the curve right now is investing in sort of 2032 to 2037 bonds, where you're earning just sub 10% if you want, and you're able to sort of lock that in for reasonable periods of time. If the trajectory remains positive, there's a bit of a capital gain available for the investors. And at a 10% yield, it's still quite interesting for investors.
All right. So, Nolan, I know this is very difficult for you, but for the retail investor to access government bonds is a bit difficult apart from retail savings bonds. So if you're trying to access SA govies, would you go and access a fund or an ETF?
I always believe that funds work better for bonds, significantly better. If you look at historic track records, most funds, I think the historic experience is something like 70% of funds will outperform the relative benchmark. Now, bear in mind that ETFs generally underperform a benchmark. So, you've got a 70% chance in a fund of being better off. that's where you want to invest in fixed income.
Nolan, thank you for your early morning. That's Nolan from Anchor Capital, co-CIO. That's it for today. We're live every weekday morning on MoneyWeb website and the app at 6:30 a.m. and the podcast is available from just after 7 a.m. A massive thank you to the team, Eddie, Kaldora, Nicole, to you listening and my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Kiara Nanyana from Think Markets. This is MoneyWeb Now. Tomorrow there'll be a holiday. On Thursday, join King McLachlan from Integral Asset Management hosting. Stay safe and go well.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.